Chapter 56. Days later, the pregnancy was announced publicly. The papers reported that Meg was battling fatigue and dizzy spells and couldn't hold down any food, especially in the mornings, all of which was untrue. She was tired, but otherwise a dynamo. Indeed, she felt lucky not to be suffering severe morning sickness, since we were embarking on a hugely demanding tour. Everywhere we went, enormous crowds turned out, and she didn't disappoint them. All across Australia, Tonga, Fiji, New Zealand, she dazzled. After one especially rousing speech, she got a standing ovation. She was so brilliant that midway through the tour I felt compelled to warn her. "You're doing too well, my love. Too damn well. You're making it look too easy." This is how everything started, with my mother. Maybe I sounded mad, paranoid, but everyone knew that Mummy's situation went from bad to worse when she showed the world, showed the family, that she was better at touring, better at connecting with people, better at being royal than she had any right to be. That was when things really took a turn. We returned home to jubilant welcomes and exultant headlines. Meg, the expectant mother, the flawless representative of the crown, was hailed. Not a negative word was written. "It's changed," we said. "It's changed at last." But then it changed again. Oh, how it changed. Stories rolled in like breakers on a beach. First a rubbish hit piece by a hack biographer of Pa, who said I'd thrown a tantrum before the wedding. Then a work of fiction about Meg making her staff miserable, driving them too hard, committing the unpardonable sin of emailing people early in the morning. She just happened to be up that hour, trying to stay in touch with night owl friends back in America. She didn't expect an instant reply. She was also said to have driven our assistant to quit. In fact, that assistant was asked to resign by Palace HR after we showed them evidence she'd traded on her position with Meg to get freebies. But because we couldn't speak publicly about the reasons for the assistant's departure, rumours filled the void. In many ways, that was the true start of all the troubles. Shortly thereafter, the Duchess difficult narrative began appearing in all the papers. Next came a novella in one of the tabloids about the tiara. The article said Meg had demanded a certain tiara that had belonged to Mummy, and when the Queen refused, I'd thrown a fit. "What Meghan wants, Meghan gets," it read. Days later came the coup de grace from a royal correspondent, a sci-fi fantasy describing the growing froidure, good lord, between Kate and Meg, claiming that according to two sources, Meg had reduced Kate to tears about the bridesmaids' dresses. This particular royal correspondent had always made me ill. She'd always got stuff wrong. But this felt more than wrong. I read the story in disbelief. Meg didn't. She still wasn't reading anything. She heard about it, however, since it was the only thing being discussed in Britain for the next 24 hours. And as long as I live, I'll never forget the tone of her voice as she looked me in the eye and said, "Has I made her cry? I made her cry?"